God damn you.
It is a little strange that we have such an aversion to slavery because historically there have been abuses for many people, poor people, perhaps people who weren't educated, perhaps people who had no other opportunity. Working for a gentle, caring, loving master was the best of all possible worlds.
Campus is a loaded minefield. There are girls everywhere. And it's guaranteed that I will pass some attractive girls as I walk in between classes.
If it's not requiring her to sin, but simply hurting her, then I think she endures verbal abuse for a season, and she endures perhaps being smacked one night, and then she seeks help from the church.
It would be hard for me to see how a woman could be a drill sergeant.
Right face, left face, keep your mouth shut, private.
Over men without violating their sense of manhood and her sense of womanhood.
Go home.
They want power, not equality. This is the highest location they can ascend to that power in the evangelical church.
We are meaning makers and storytellers. And the stories we tell ourselves are the stories that shape our lives.
We need each other badly or goodly. We need each other. And we keep forgetting again and again and again that we are loved. And we say, no, I'm no good. No, I messed it all up. No, I feel so guilty. No, I feel so ashamed. We need each other. In the midst of this difficult, dark, and often violent world, we need to have a community of support to which we can call all people and be a community of hope.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Opening. I'm Rick Pidcock, and we are back to reading and reviewing some of our articles. We'll be reading one for this episode, but before I get to that, I have a big announcement to make. I decided recently to start a second podcast, and it is available wherever you listen to podcasts. We've got, it's called The Infinite Mystery Podcast, and if you recognize that name, it's because I recently released a song called An Infinite Mystery, and the three singles that I've released this year are kind of worked together to give my message to the church, which is the three songs were Dear Church, and then Go Be Free, and then An Infinite Mystery. And so what I'd like to do for this second podcast that I'm starting called Infinite Mystery is to kind of explore what that infinite mystery is. So with this particular podcast, I'm looking at articles that I've written with The Opening, and then I'm reflecting on them. And so a lot of this one is driven by the evangelical conversation in the United States. So like today, we're going to be looking at a documentary called The American Gospel Documentary. And normally, my life doesn't operate by from a space of thinking about the American Gospel Documentary. That's not really how I define my understanding of spirituality, but by being a religion writer in the United States, part of what I do is talk about what other people are putting out. And so, hence, in this podcast, we're talking about the American Gospel Documentary. But really, what I'd like to do with the Infinite Mystery Podcast is to begin to... It's going to be more of a short-form podcast. And what I'd like to do with that one is just to explore the uniting of all things from the perspectives of the mystics. And so I'm going to be more starting off with a reading of a poem or a writing from somebody who had a more mystical understanding, a more contemplative understanding of the cosmos and of their relationship with themselves and with everyone around them. And then I will be sharing some reflections on that. And it's not going to be an edited podcast. I'm basically recording out on my back porch. I've got a microphone for that. And it's going to have a bit of a more spiritual feel, probably, than this one will. It's going to have a little bit more of a meditative feel than this one will, but I think it'll really give me an opportunity to explore some of what inspires me a lot more, rather than simply dealing with a lot of the religious drama that goes on in the United States that I enjoy talking about, but, you know, isn't really necessarily resonating. It doesn't really resonate with the core of who I am. So that podcast, the Infinite Mystery Podcast, you can find it on my website, rickpidcock.com. You can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts, and I'll be releasing episodes to that pretty regularly. So also, regarding tomorrow in my time, this will actually have already happened for you, the James Webb Telescope is going to be releasing some images, and by now you've seen them, you've seen a lot of the conversation about those. And I wanted to just remind everyone that a couple years ago I did an album called Consider the Stars, and I released it under the artist name Provoke Wonder. And in that album, I really wanted to see how, you know, reflect on what is our identity as humans in the cosmos, in light of the stars, and to kind of follow the psalmist's example of when I consider the heavens, when I consider the stars, what is humanity? Like, what if we considered that question today in how we understand the stars in modern cosmology? And so that was an album that I released. And so if you're looking for some music that kind of explores some of the spiritual poetry of space, I would definitely recommend checking that out. And you can listen to that on Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple, wherever you get your music, it's available. So, but today for this episode, we are going to be reading an article called Six Ways American Gospel is Small-Minded and Abusive. And these are the guys who, when I was interviewing Wendell Griffin, who was a U.S. Circuit judge and a pastor over the last three episodes, when we're talking about men who use theology to sacralize their power and misogyny, these are the guys we're talking about. So this article was originally written on August 14th, 2020 for Baptist News Global, and it was Six Ways American Gospel is Small-Minded and Abusive. I grew up so terrified of God's wrath that I drove through a stoplight while staring at my speedometer, afraid I'd lose my salvation for breaking God's law in Romans 13 by going 36 miles per hour in a 35 mile per hour zone. When my grandfather died, I was convinced he was burning in hell and that it was mostly my fault for not witnessing enough. But then I was introduced to John MacArthur, John Piper, Mark Dever, and Matt Chandler, and learned about their Calvinist theology that told me that I could be confident in my salvation because the Father's wrath was satisfied against Jesus on the cross for me, and that God chooses who gets saved apart from our will or effort. This theology numbed my pain. And for the next 15 years, these men became my heroes as I led worship and preached within their world. In May 2020, Netflix released a documentary called American Gospel, Christ Alone, which is a conservative evangelical Calvinist's dream world of John MacArthur, John Piper, Mark Dever, Matt Chandler, and others. American Gospel criticizes what these high-profile pastors consider to be the false gospels of moralism and the health and wealth gospel through their Calvinistic reformed lens of penal substitutionary atonement. The Gospel Coalition hails the film as a thrill to see. I strongly agree with their intention to dismantle the ministries that manipulate people for money. John Piper is correct in calling it a crap gospel. And there are even moments when I found myself agreeing with MacArthur's henchman, Phil Johnson. If the gospel is good news to the poor to let the oppressed go free, then those who oppress the poor need to be exposed. However, while I agree with their intention to expose the oppressors, I ultimately found their solution to be small-minded and abusive. Here are six reasons why. First, American Gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of authority. Out of 45 cast members, 42 are men. The documentary contains about 394 clips of conservative men talking, compared to about 47 clips of women talking. While the men are primarily included for instruction, the women mostly share emotional stories of their very real suffering and how deceived, depressed, and vocationally dumb they were before they started listening to and agreeing with the conservative men. American Gospel's severely limited cast diminishes their ability to see and share the gospel and enables a patriarchal power structure. These are the same men who argue that women should not be police officers or managers at work, that women are to be associated with word games and told to go home, and that if women are in charge, we're in trouble, and that women who try to be in charge can sit there with all your jewelry and junk after being conquered because you overpowered your protector. It's no wonder they feature so few women sharing their perspectives in this documentary. Why can't we unleash and learn from the women of our world for the humans they are? Second, American Gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of other religions. Because they view the gospel as penal substitutionary atonement, these pastors falsely categorize all other religions as people trying to earn their way to heaven. Paul Washer says, "In other religions, you get to heaven by being good, by earning it." Jackie Hill Perry says, "The person will believe they can attain it, be the Pharisee, or be the Mormon," then laughing, "or the Muslim, or the Jehovah's Witness, all of them. You try to earn salvation by trying to be a good person." This laughing dismissal of all of them refuses to see and love our neighbors. I have learned much from Buddhists about being mindful and present, about seeing beauty in the whole. Even within Buddhism, there are many nuances to explore. To reduce Buddhism down to a penal substitutionary lens of trying to earn heaven after death by good works completely misses the beauty that Buddhists bring to our world and categorizes them as something to be feared. It also assumes that other religions even care about going to heaven after they die. Why can't we develop relationships with all of them? Appreciate their beauty and consider with them how we can be more present in grace. Third, American Gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of sin and justice. It's difficult to explore presence and grace with others when you're convinced they've broken the law and are about to be set on fire forever by God. While the documentary acknowledges the idea of original sin, where we are all condemned simply for being human, it mostly focuses on individual-based law-breaking. Ray Comfort does his classic Ten Commandments interview where he corners strangers into admitting they are lawbreakers. He says, "Good in God's book means morally perfect, so anyone who isn't morally perfect is led to believe that they deserve to be set on fire forever." Paul Washer says, "We owed a debt to God because of our sin, and that debt was eternal punishment." But sin is far more complex than lawbreaking. Our brains are a network of neurons that create relationships to situations and people in our minds that we aren't even aware of. When others are included, our subconscious networks relate with theirs in relationships we aren't even aware of. Exploring the depths of who we are as a relationship ourselves and in relationship with others is a fascinating journey of learning to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. Yet Steve Kozar ignores that and boils it all down to this: that is the reason why many people refuse to become a Christian. They don't want to repent. They don't want to give up their sin. They like sinning. This simplistic, individual, law-breaking view of sin ignores the very real communal sins that America has committed. Not once do these faith leaders mention slavery, mass incarceration, or Christian nationalism. Only 3 of the 42 men interviewed are black. Of the approximately 394 video clips from men, only 7 are from these 3 black men. This group's theological clique is so small that they aren't including those on the margins. They seemingly aren't even aware of how their retributive, punitive theology has shaped the American gospel for centuries and created our culture that views justice as inflicting pain rather than restoring shalom. Why can't we embrace neuroscience to plunge the depths of our failure to love ourselves and our neighbors and pursue a restorative view of justice? Fourth, American Gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of human identity. Michael Durham says, "My problem of sin goes far beyond my actions. It goes to who I am as a person. I have a nature of sin. That is my essence. The gospel addresses who I am by promising to change me at the core basic level of personhood." Sean DeMars says, "One of my favorite attributes of God is God's patience. And it means God doesn't give you what you immediately deserve. What you deserve right now at this very moment is to be killed and to be in hell for all of eternity and suffering his wrath because of the way you rebel against the God who made you. Really? Right now, my 2-year-old daughter doesn't want to stay in her bed. These men really think she deserves to be ripped out of her room and thrown into an eternity of burning because of who she is at her core? We are the result of 13.8 billion years of cosmic life, death, and resurrection evolving from matter to consciousness. We haven't fallen from perfection. We've been beautifully grown. Why can't we see humanity for the beautiful fruit of complexity, depth, and union that we are? Fifth, American gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of suffering. According to American gospel, God ordains and wills all suffering, calamity, and disease, and death. Steve Lawson says, God is the one who said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job?" Why would God cause our suffering? Lawson explains, God has purposes for our suffering to humble us, to conform us into the image of Christ, to wean us off of the world, to purify us, and to help us identify with other people who are suffering. John Piper is also the guy who tells victims of child molestation that they need to see God's sovereignty at the moment of causality, and if they don't, you will now be left with no God to help you deal with this. You have just shoved him off, and in your pain, you shoved him so far to the edge of the universe that for the rest of your life you are crying out to a God to do miracles, yet you have pushed him away. And so you try to say there is no sense in which the sovereign God willed that? You will lose God for the rest of your life. Throughout the documentary, we are told of a woman's suffering that is totally heartbreaking. Due to her disease, she has to be fed directly into her intestines. She says, "Even though I don't know all the answers, I'm not looking for answers. I'm not angry with God anymore because I don't think he owes me anything. I feel like he's giving me a wonderful life, and I'm not even owed that." This woman is experiencing unimaginable suffering, yet these men have led her to believe that God has caused her pain to teach her some lessons. Why does this woman need to have her pain numbed with theological formulas about penal transactions? Why can't she fully enter into it, grieve, and be healed? Sixth, American gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of the cosmos. The French Jesuit mystic and scientist Teilhard de Chardin said at Western Christianity has assumed the appearance of a legal trial between God and his creatures. If we embrace modern science, we see that the universe is not made up of individual separated parts, but is a cosmic organic whole. The universe at its core is energy in relationship, matter in becoming, consciousness being set free in greater complexity, depth, and union. Colossians 1:15-20 explores this cosmic becoming by setting all of creation in Christ. The true incarnation is an overflow of God that sets Christ not as a reactionary second Adam, but as the firstborn of all creation, as the head of the whole universal body. American gospel hits its apex with John MacArthur saying, "Every sin ever committed by every person who has ever lived will be punished. That is required by divine holiness and divine righteousness and divine justice. It will either be punished everlastingly in the life of the sinner, or that punishment will be borne by Christ." The men of American Gospel Christ Alone believe in a gospel that ignores 13.8 billion years of the cosmos becoming from and into Christ as its head and all in all. Instead, they break it all apart into individual penal transactions and pain infliction. Paul Washer says, "If someone doesn't have a right view of the gospel, they don't have a right view about anything." Is it any wonder that men with this individualistic penal view of the gospel would have such wrong views on authority, other religions, human identity, suffering, and the entire cosmos? So what I thought I would do in responding and reflecting back on this article now is to go through these 6 points that I made about the 6 ways that it's small-minded and abusive, and share some ways that we can open up from these places toward a more healthy relationship. So, the first point was that American gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of authority. And so, I think one thing we need to do is reject the idea that men have a divine right to be the authority of women and children. In my interview with Wendell Griffin, he called this a sacralization of misogyny. Men do not have this divine right. I've mentioned it a number of times. There were ancient hierarchical views of the cosmos back then, and they believed that husbands were in charge of their wives, that men were in charge of their children, and that male slave owners were in charge of their slaves. And that was the structure of the household that the biblical authors were operating in. And so that was a structure that was set up by the culture. That was not God dictating that men are to be in charge of everybody. And so we need to reject that idea. And then in rejecting that idea, we also need to recognize our own authority. Women need to be able to recognize their own authority. Those who are not in places of authority within the evangelical world, you need to recognize your own authority. You've had a life, and you have experiences, and you have intuition, and you have come to know things, and you have an authority in you that you need to honor and that you need to recognize and to have a confidence in. And also recognize the authority of others. That, you know, we can recognize the authority of people who actually know what they're talking about, like scientists, when they talk about evolutionary biology or the age of the universe, or, you know, whatever it might be. We can actually listen to historians like Kristen Dumais or Beth Allison Barr, and we can recognize, oh, these people have authority that maybe the Owen Strakens of the world and the John MacArthurs of the world like to dismiss. But when you recognize your own authority, you can also recognize the authority of others who are not using their authority to abuse others and to control others. And then finally, within that, also see authority as something that arises from within, that converges together as wholeness toward wholeness. Your authority comes from the core of who you are as a human. And the authority of others comes from the core of who they are as a human. And that's why it's important to listen to your heart, to listen to your mind, and to not be afraid of that, of those things, and to foster an openness within toward wholeness and toward the infinity within you converging with the infinity outside of you, because that is going to help give you a view of authority and a confidence with your own authority and a trust for the authority of others that is not fostered within these hierarchical views of evangelical Christianity. The second one was that the American gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of other religions. Now, over the last year or so, I've tried to read some of the holy books of other religions. And I've also, over the last few years, read a lot of the poetry from these other religions. And quite frankly, a lot of like the original holy books that certain religions have, I don't really resonate with. I recognize too much hierarchy in them, too much religious threats in them, that they tend to bother me. But across the religions, when I read the poets and the mystics, I really resonate with what they have to say. These are, you know, people like Rumi or Khalil Gibran or some of the poetry of Chan Buddhism, or the Bhagavad Gita is what I've been looking at more recently. And And so I think it's helpful to read the poetry and to read the people within these religions who could see the relationship within themselves and among themselves. And that's ultimately what I'm doing with this other podcast that I'm starting, Infinite Mystery, is I'm going to be getting into some specifics about, like, reading some of what they had to say and then sharing my perspective and how I'm understanding what they're saying and how it resonates with my story and how I'm coming to see reality. And so I'd encourage you to read the poets and the mystics from other religions beyond just your own. Also, get to know other people from other religions who aren't part of your religion, or maybe get to know people who are not part of any religion. Rather than looking down on the spiritual but not religious, maybe try becoming their friend with no agenda to change them. And when you do that, you can begin to discover their wonders. You can become to see what makes them come alive. The third one was that the American gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of sin and justice. I just wonder, what if we reconsidered the concept of sin so that rather than being about breaking a law and getting punished, we thought in terms of home and exile? And this could totally resonate with a Christian view even of the Bible. You see, Eden was like their home. That's where they were in fellowship with themselves, with one another, with God, with the animals, with the plants, like with creation. This was their home. This is what they longed for. And then what happened was they end up exiling from one another and exiling from the animals and exiling ultimately from the garden. Like, what if we thought of, when we think of the word sin, what if we redefined it more in terms of home and exile? So to be whole would be to be at home in yourself and at home with others. In exile, what is wrong, would be to be disconnected from home, to live out a narrative toward others that fuels disconnection. What if justice was making all things new? You know, the Bible talks about making all things new. What if that actually was justice? What if justice actually was the healing of the nations? The deepening of awareness and the experience with the wholeness that's been growing in our bodies and among our consciousness for billions of years, what if that was justice? A deepening awareness and experience of that. The next one was that American gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of human identity. And I mentioned that we are not fallen from perfection, but we are the fruit of the cosmos. Like, we have literally, within our bodies, the elements that have been cultivated in stars that we're now seeing through the James Webb telescope. When you see the images of that, you're seeing your body. You're seeing what now makes up your body. Because what was at the core of stars, when it died, it spread throughout the universe, and those are the elements that give us life. And so we are the fruit of all of that. As life evolved on planet Earth, we are the fruit of this. That's not something to be disappointed in. That's not something to look at and see as cursed and fallen from some state of perfection that actually never existed. That's something to be present with and to celebrate. That has to affect our theology of what it is to be human. The fifth one was that American gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of suffering. What if we were free to simply grieve our suffering? Like, over the last year, Ruth Ellen, my wife, has had cancer, and she's gone through chemo and surgery and radiation, and I've been taking care of 5 kids. And through all of this, I don't need a bunch of glory formulas. I don't need to be making sure God is getting enough glory out there on a throne somewhere out in outer space. Like, I need to grieve and be present. And isn't that where Jesus said he would be present? In our clothing of the naked? In our feeding of the hungry? Our healing of the wounded? Our freeing of the oppressed? But we get so caught up in this American gospel, the documentary, their mindset of hierarchy. We're so concerned with making sure God gets glory and this doesn't get wasted. And we got to say all the right words to make sure he's honored on his throne. And we can't just be here with what is. What if we were free to be here? And then finally, American gospel has a small-minded, abusive view of the cosmos. You know, what if you could look at the James Webb Telescope images and actually be in wonder of them instead of spreading conspiracy theories about them? What if you could go to museums and actually learn things instead of just seeing them as an opportunity to look at plastic dinosaurs? What if you could go and learn about a universe far bigger and more ancient than you ever imagined without having to deny it all to hold up the pseudoscience of biblical inerrancy? It's okay to acknowledge reality. And when we learn the story of the cosmos, we discover the story that's held within our bodies. We hold within our bodies the unfolding of wholeness, but also exiles and wounds that have been formed in us. And that's affected everything about us, including the Christian experience of worship. And so that is what we're going to be discussing in our next episode of The Opening.
I don't think that the church has integrity to speak any good news at all until the church actually understands the reality that it is living and has crafted bad news in public policy. It has established theological foundations for oppression that have lived throughout the times and only changed shape over the generations, but has not been repented of.
Bad theology always produces diminished psychology produces dysfunctional sociology. Dysfunctional sociology always produces oppressive anthropology, and then they always produce oppressive economics and ideologies. You see, it all flows from bad theology. Your notion of God is wrong or flawed. Your notion of self and others and power is wrong.
Thank you for listening to The Opening Podcast with Rick Pidcock. The Opening is a podcast that deconstructs the power dynamics of religious hierarchies and opens us up to healthy relationship. For more information about today's episode, please check out rickpidcock.com and follow on social media at rickpidcock.